You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. $9.33 here on a Friday. Mike McNamara with you. Okay, so let me introduce you to Agnes Shearer. Okay, I'll tell you a little bit about her. I already did, but I found her obituary. So let me tell you a little bit more of her. Kind of person. So the nation's mesmerized on jackasses, right? On jackasses and jackassery. Okay. We'll kind of go in a different direction a little bit today. So I'm excited to do it. All right, Agnes Shearer. Agnes G. Shearer passed away in Grand Forks, North Dakota on January 10th, 2015. She was born on October 18th, 1915 to Frederick and Helen Shearer. After graduating from Glenburn High School, Agnes began her life in the service of others. She entered St. Joseph's Hospital School of Nursing, the same nursing school her mother had attended, so obviously very much influenced. Upon receiving her RN, Agnes enlisted in the United States Navy on March 1st, 1937. She retired from the Navy in 1938. And then looking at her picture, I'll throw up on Facebook here in a minute, she obviously achieved the rank of a field grade officer, at least, because she's got the scrambled eggs on her cover. So, and she wears some pretty impressive ribbons. It looks like the Asiatic Pacific ribbons and those campaign ribbons. She was on the hospital ship Solis, stationed in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, during the Japanese bombing of Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941. You'll hear about that. She became a flight nurse during the Korean War, airlifting badly injured military personnel from various military hospitals in Japan to Tripler Hospital in Hawaii. I believe it's Tripler Hospital in Hawaii, then to Traverse Air Force Base. And that is Travis Air Force Base in California. While in the Navy, she was trained as a nurse anesthesiologist. Upon her retirement from the Navy, she returned to North Dakota to start a school for nurse anesthesiologists at St. Michael's Hospital. Agnes left St. Michael's in 1963 to join the World Health Organization. So she'd been home for about 5 years. She was sent by the World Health Organization to Afghanistan for 2 years. Next, she attended Columbia University, obtaining her master's degree. She then returns to North Dakota, the city of Grand Forks, which is the home of the University of North Dakota, this time to become a professor at the University School of Nursing. After she retired, she spent time volunteering in the same-day surgery at a local hospital. Agnes' life was spent in the loving service of her nation, her family, and educating young people to also serve in medicine. So you will hear from Agnes Shearer right now. And again, this interview came to me when somebody walked up to me and said, "Hey, do you know Agnes Shearer?" And I said, "No, I don't." And they said, "Well, Mac, you should have her on your program." I said, "Well, I would absolutely love to. How do I, who is she, and how do I do that?" And they said, "Well, we'll make it happen." So they gave me her phone number, and so I met her, called her up, and asked her if she would do it, and she said she'd be delighted to. And I told her that I was at the time I was out of the Marine Corps. I said, "I'm a former Marine, so don't hold that against me." And she said, "No, I love Marines." She said, "I served with them at Pearl Harbor. I served with them in the Solomon Islands. I served with them in Korea." And she said, "I have nothing but great memories of them." And I will tell you this, to me it's amazing, whether it's the corpsmen, the medics, the nurses, the people that provide medical care, how they're ever right in the head once they do that. Because, you know, they don't do it, you know, every other day. They do it every day during a war. And the short periods of time that they get to know people and then watch them fight for their lives, help them fight for their lives, that can't be easy. And so Agnes spent her life, much of her life, doing that. And again, what tickles me is this thought of a young girl in Bottineau County, North Dakota, the middle of nowhere, literally, the middle of nowhere. If you've ever seen the North Dakota Plain, and it is the Great Plain, and it stretches beyond our border into Saskatchewan. And Saskatchewan, there is nothing there. Bottineau borders up against it. And I picture this kind of little girl in a white dress with her button-up boots going to the library, looking at Life magazine, you know, looking at different periodicals and thinking, I want to see the world. And then she finds a place where she can do that safely, and that is with the United States Navy. So you're going to hear from Agnes now in her own words. And it was again my privilege. She invited me later to go to a Daughters of American Revolution luncheon and speak there. She called me up and she said, "Can I ask you a favor?" I said, "Absolutely." She said, "Would you be the guest speaker at our luncheon?" I said, "I'd be honored to." And I got to go and have lunch with her and a bunch of her friends and speak there briefly. And so with that, all that said, here's a friend of mine, Agnes Scherer, who's a true American hero and one of the everyday heroes that make this country what it is. And one of my guests this morning is currently a resident of Grand Forks. Her name is Agnes Scherer. Agnes, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
First of all, thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
And Agnes, you and I had an interesting conversation. There's a piece in the Grand Forks Herald about you yesterday. And first of all, tell everybody where you were born.
I was born in Bottineau County, North Dakota, between Glenburn and Lansford, on a farm about 30 miles mostly north of Minot.
And yesterday when you told me that, I guess the next question is, what made you want to get out and see the world? Why did you join the United States Navy as a nurse?
Well, I think many people at my age at that time were interested in seeing the world. And I had graduated from St. Joseph's Hospital, a nursing program, and was working in Rochester, Minnesota, at St. Mary's. And I decided that I wanted to go farther than that, away from North Dakota and Minnesota, though I certainly loved the state in which I was born. And so I started answering ads in the American Journal of Nursing. There were nurses wanted in several parts of the United States and the world. And I applied to the United States Navy, and they responded to all of my quests. And then in February of 1938, I was in the Navy Nurse Corps.
I don't know that we think a whole lot of getting on an airplane and traveling halfway across the world to do something, but when you joined, that's not the way you did it. You got on a boat, and there was no TV, right? You saw stuff on movies, but an exciting world out there waiting to be discovered, I would imagine.
Yes, well, I got on a train to go to Philadelphia, and of course, I had read about Philadelphia and Betsy Ross's house and
right.
And those places, and I wanted to see them. And I didn't leave the continental United States until the summer of 1941.
And was that when you were assigned to the Solis?
Yes.
Now tell us about the Solis. In fact, I looked after we spoke yesterday. I looked it up on the Internet and got a picture of it.
Uh-huh.
And tell us about what kind of ship was it?
Well, it was a hospital ship. It had been a Caribbean cruiser, and it was made over into a hospital ship. And we went aboard in August, I believe it was, of 1941. And the ship left that area after we had been aboard a few weeks. And we went south through, we went to Cuba, and the captain got off and went ashore and found out where he was supposed to go next. And it turned out to be Long Beach, California, through the Panama Canal, and that in itself was exciting and interesting. And we were in Long Beach a while, and then we went to Pearl Harbor.
When did you go to Pearl Harbor?
We arrived in Pearl Harbor the latter part of October.
And what was Pearl Harbor like that, then?
Well, it was full of Navy ships, all painted battleship gray.
And so, the nation's still at peace.
Pardon me?
The nation's still at peace at that time.
Yes.
And
yes.
And you guys are moored in the middle of Pearl Harbor. The picture, according to the diagram I saw, the day of the attack. What was your life like on a daily basis? Just the work that you did in Pearl Harbor before the attack.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were not very busy at all because we just received patients from the ships in the harbor that were part of the ship's crews. And that's usually a very healthy bunch of people, so we didn't have a whole lot to do.
So what did you do with all your free time?
Well, we made bandages. You know, we made our own bandages in those days and our own operating room linen, and we did things of that nature.
And then how often could you get off the ship?
We were free to go off the ship when we weren't on duty.
So every night, I mean, now what was it a fun place to be stationed?
Before? Yes, it was. Yes, it was. It's beautiful, of course, and
right.
The climate is wonderful, and there was a lot to do. The beaches are wonderful, and we enjoyed being there.
I can imagine. What now? That obviously all changes on the morning of December 7th. Now, previous to that, the previous weekend, the area had been placed on a higher state of alert. Were you guys constantly getting messages of in terms of alert statuses, or what were you at all concerned about an attack previous to that?
Well, no, certainly not in Pearl Harbor. I can remember a group of us were invited to one of the battleships for dinner one evening, and the captain was seeing us off after the dinner, and he asked me if my parents thought that there was going to be war in the Pacific. And, of course, I didn't have any answer for that. I didn't know whether there was or not. Clearly, the higher officials were concerned, but I don't think any of them thought it would be at Pearl Harbor.
Now, let's talk about the morning of December 7th. What were you doing that Sunday morning?
Well, I was sleeping.
Really?
Yes. I was in bed. I had the Sunday off.
Now, were you were aboard the ship, the Solis, correct?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, now let me just explain to people so they know where you were, because mm-hmm. I have a diagram of Pearl Harbor that day. The Solis was, I think, the most common sight that people remember now is you see videotape of the USS Arizona kind
yes.
of exploding.
Yes.
And if you from that viewpoint, the Solis was to the right of the USS Arizona and further back around kind of the corner of Ford Island. So that's where you were sitting. You were sleeping on that ship that morning.
Yes.
And so what woke you? What did you? What happened?
Well, there was a lot of commotion, and. And there was a call over the loudspeaker to all hands return to their duty stations. And this is no drill. And so that's what we did.
And so you get out of bed. Did you go up topside and take a look? Or did
no.
you just go to your... Now, what was your duty station?
I had a ward, about a 20-bed ward, medical ward. I was in charge of that ward.
And so you went straight there. What could you hear? To hear something like that, obviously boggles your mind because you just have dinner
on an American battleship not too recently, and the captain muses about war in the Pacific, but as you said, certainly not in Pearl Harbor. What was going through your mind as you thought, you know, as you tried to come to grips with the events of the morning?
Well, I saw the officers on our ship running on the deck, and they never ever do that, so I knew there was something quite unusual going on, and I looked out another window and I saw a plane and saw the rising sun emblazoned on it, and saw the black smoke going up and the ship tilting over. Well, I went right on down to the station, and I didn't see any more of that. Well, I did also saw a ship next to us sending up aircraft fire, but I went right down to my duty station, and I didn't see any more of the action after that. I could hear it, and the explosions would shake the ship, but I didn't see it.
How long did it take, and that was at what time, local time, in Hawaii?
It was right after 8 o'clock.
Right after 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Now, how long before you guys started receiving casualties?
Well, we received them almost right away, because our Liberty group, the men that could go ashore on Liberty at 8 a.m., were standing up for inspection. The officer of the day always inspects them before they go ashore, and the Liberty boats were waiting for them. So in their dress whites, they went down and got into the Liberty boats and started bringing in patients.
Anything in your life prepare you for what you did that day?
Well, we knew that we were in the Navy. I had been at the Naval Air Station in Pensacola, Florida, and we knew that there was an international emergency and that Europe was at war. While I was still in Philadelphia, one of our nurses had gone to the Caribbean area on vacation, and she was not able to get back in September. It was in September, because Great Britain had declared war. And so she was late getting back, and I can remember that. So we knew that there was an international situation, and that there was war in Europe.
But I can imagine now, on December 7th, I won't say how do you forget something like that, but does your mind wander to that day with all the stuff that we've seen with both nurses and, you know, soldiers, sailors, airmen, and marine, as these anniversaries approach, the memories remain vivid. Do you still think about that day often?
Well, I don't think about it often, but of course, this past year there has been a lot going on, and I did go to see the movie Pearl Harbor. But also in the Navy, we moved from station to station about every 2 years. And you kind of learn to put the past behind you and look to the future and don't dwell on the past that much.
Now, after Pearl Harbor, where did you...
Just so everybody knows, this interview takes place in 2001. So September 11th has happened. And one of the things we're talking about. But it's interesting... her talking about letting go of things. And again, I wish I could have done this interview after I'd been to Iraq, at least once to talk about the mental health piece in it. Because there's so much more there. And to be honest with you, I didn't know what she did in the Korean War. You know, airlifting military, you know, personnel from Korea to Japan. So she's an in-flight nurse, you know, with all that went on to that. But just so you know when this was done, you know, I think we talk about September 11th coming up here pretty quick. But anyway, let me butt out.
How long did you stay on the Solus? And obviously that morning the Solus was not hit, correct?
No.
Okay, and then... What were the days after that like? How long did you treat casualties? Obviously, you go from kind of a ship with not a whole lot of patients to, I can imagine, overflowing with patients.
Yes. Well, after about 2 weeks, I can't remember the actual time, maybe 10 days or maybe it was longer than 2 weeks, every patient that possibly could tolerate the about the 1 week trip back to the United States was sent back to the United States. So again, we didn't have very much to do, but we did make a lot of bandages and get things together.
Okay, and then where did you head after that?
And then we headed out to sea. We didn't know where we were going. And our first stop was in Guam. And we were there for a while. And we eventually were taking care of casualties from the Solomon Islands.
From Guadalcanal and
yeah.
There you go.
Yes.
The and then so that was, how long did you do that? How many? When did you get off the ship?
I left in December of 1942.
And then where'd you go?
And I came home for 30 days leave.
What was that like?
Well, there were five of us, and we were on ocean-going liners were named after presidents, and I can't remember the particular president's name our ship had, but we were on that. And it was, and there were a lot of the patients, again, it was about 2 weeks at sea. They zigzagged, and so that made it take a little longer. But we arrived in San Francisco on New Year's Day in 1943. And then after 30 months vacation, I went to Colonia, California.
And did you come back? Did you go back to Botno on your vacation, on your leave?
I went back to the farm, yes. Visited my folks.
So what did your folks have to say? Obviously, you know, one of their babies is out in and amongst us. What did your mom and dad have to say?
Well, I heard that the first message they got from me after Pearl Harbor was an airmail letter. You know, we had airmail letters in those days.
Right.
And our mailbox was quite a distance from the house, but that day the mailman brought that letter up to the house and gave it to my folks.
So it was a special event.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Well, and obviously they must have been very, very relieved and happy to see you when you got home to the farm.
Oh, yeah. I was happy to see them, too.
Let me ask you about your thoughts this past September 11th. Sitting here today and watching the videotape of the Japanese plane circle around Pearl Harbor and attack Pearl Harbor, and then at the end of the videotape they showed the planes crashing in to the World Trade Tower. What were your thoughts? Did it bring back any sense of, I don't want to say deja vu, but any sense of those same feelings?
Well, yes, of course it was very different, and I knew immediately that things were not ever going to be the same, that was going to make a great deal of difference in the lives of all of us.
Has it, the way the country has responded, typically an American response, myself as a former veteran, I'm very pleased and proud of the way the nation's responded and the resolve both the president have shown and the people of our country. What are your thoughts on that? Are you surprised at all by any of that?
I'm not surprised at that, really. I think it's wonderful that it happens, but in a sense, that's just how people do in a situation like that, I think.
Agnes, what a final question, then I'll let you go. Your thoughts about 60 years after Pearl Harbor, what do you, when people ask you about it, what is the one thing you try to tell them about either Pearl Harbor or about what you did in World War II? What is the one thing you'd like them to know about either that event or your experience in World War II?
Well, that there's nothing glorious about war at all, and that it is to be prevented, if that's in any way possible. But we do have to look after ourselves and be responsible for ourselves, and we can't just let other people or countries dictate to the world.
And in retrospect, signing up in, was it 1938?
Yes.
To become a nurse, you got a chance to see a fair amount of the world. Was you pleased with your experience? And you spent, 22 years in the Navy?
Yes, indeed.
So all in all, a pretty interesting experience from growing up in Botno County.
It certainly was. But I did come back to North Dakota.
And we're awfully glad you did. When you got out of the Navy, where did you move back to?
Grand Forks.
And you've been here ever since?
Yes, pretty much. I was away 3 years. I was in Afghanistan for 2 years with the World Health Organization. And then I went to school for a year and got my master's in nursing. And then came back here again.
Where were you in Afghanistan?
In Kabul, the capital city.
So,
and the king was in power at that time, and it was peaceful.
Was it a nice place to be?
Well, it was primitive in many ways. But you know how it is. There was an international community there, and people just enjoy each other. You make new friends and learn more about the world that way.
That's a whole other interview we can do someday.
Well, someday.
All right. Well, on a day that American looks back to 60 years ago, and I'm sure people remember what they were doing. I know that my mom and dad talk about being in their parents' living room and either having the radio on or all of a sudden hearing somebody gasp and run to the radio. It's an honor to talk to somebody who was there and in some way contributed to what the United States did in the Pacific and during World War II. So, Agnes, thank you very much for coming on this morning.
Well, thank you.
All right. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That is Agnes Scherer.
How about that? That is awesome. Honestly, I'm sitting here smiling like a fool. Honest. I love those kind of interviews. Absolutely love them, and love doing them, and love everything about them. So, Agnes Scherer on a. My computer, I was trying to record something. Actually, I was trying to salvage something. And the file that I was trying to salvage it from wouldn't load. It was too big, and it said, you don't have enough disk space. I said, what do you mean? My computer's got 2 terabytes worth of disk space. How could I not? And so I don't, you know, I'm looking at it, and lo and behold, it's not there. It isn't there. And so I look and I see all these files. So I've spent the last couple of days clearing out my computer, and lo and behold, I thought I had lost it. I find this interview, and like I said, I can't tell you how excited I was when I listened to it, and I thought, you know, I have to share this. So we're going to take a quick break. Agnes Scherer, somebody, a hero amongst us, certainly, and somebody who devoted her whole life. She was not only part of she talked about. She's in the Pacific at the start of World War II. And so they leave and they head for, you know, she said we didn't even know where we were going, headed for Guam. And so so they head for Guam, and then she winds up, the Solis winds up supporting the Solomon Island campaign, which would have been the Solomon Islands and then Bougainville. So then she gets to come home. She arrives in San Francisco on New Year's Day in 1943. If you could imagine what how nice that would have been after what she'd been through. And again, the perspective of a nurse, uniquely different than the perspective of, somebody who's actually out there doing the shooting and the killing. A nurse provides comfort. And then to go home, how about the story that she tells about the mailman? You know, that the mailbox was far away from the house. And on this day, he brought her letter down to the house and gave it to her mom. And then, you know, she talked about how excited she was to be home and be back on the farm. I don't know, you can get a whole lot farther from the Solomon Islands and the war in the Pacific than Botno, North Dakota. The peace and tranquility and the sameness I'm sure, provided great comfort for her. And then she, the United States goes to war in World War II, and she's a nurse and ultimately winds up being a nurse on airlifts from Korea to Japan. So, again, Agnes Scherer, awesome. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you're going to hear from Harris Holman. And, again, another almost the same kind of interview that he goes at Pointe du Hoc. Incredible. More of Allmarine Radio on a Friday, an inspirational Friday, at least for us, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. This hour of Allmarine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.